Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
All right, welcome back to the Anthony Irwin Show. I am Anthony Irwin. Couple episodes this week as Sabrina is out tonight. So we are doing another episode of the AI show here. I am joined by Kristen Rivas. Kristen, how interested are you or tempted are you to change your name to Kristen Rivas?
It wouldn't be the first time. I actually, during Summer League, I changed my Twitter name to Kristen Reeves. And then he had another game this season that caused me to do it. Tonight certainly warrants a name change, but I'm going to let him have his moment. I'm not trying to steal any of his shine.
I was legitimately nervous for him because all of the Lakers were like hugging him and pumping his chest and all that stuff. And I'm like sitting there like, he weighs like a buck 50 soaking wet. Yeah. And there are some giant human beings tugging on him and all that. And I was, you know, given the way that injuries have gone so far this year, I was a little nervous.
Like, that's prime droplet territory for this team right now. Like, I would have just put my hands out.
Yeah. Yeah. Social distance. Yeah. Social distancing on the celebration. Yeah. That's going to be another topic here. So we are going to talk about Austin Reeves. I want to talk about Wayne Ellington. Frank Vogel goes with both of those guys instead of Avery Bradley to finish the game and in overtime. That felt kind of notable here. Kristen, you wrote up an article for SuperScreenAndRoll.com about the potential trades that the Lakers could be making. So we're going to go through those, and I'm going to grade those. And then as this is your maiden voyage on the AI show, you are going to be giving me an embarrassing sports moment. Are you excited for that one, or do you have one that you already have kind of bouncing around in there?
Yeah, I have a few. I played as a right back in soccer, so they tends to happen a lot.
Yeah, playing defense in soccer is pretty thankless. All right, let's start with Austin Reeves. So in this game, he plays, 32 minutes for Austin Reeves. That's a career high. He is a plus 10 overall on the night. He scores 15 points, grabs 7 boards, couple assists, a steal, 5 of 6 from 3-point range, including the game winner. And, you know, at what point does this, unless it's already happened, like, when does this become real? Like, when do the Lakers reliably rely on this guy?
I don't know when that time will be, but I certainly think he has earned it by now. I wanted to kind of see, because at the beginning of the season, I was banging on the table for Austin Reeves to start. Uh-huh. Like, a few games in his career, I was in. He just does things that make the starting lineup look a lot better. On defense, obviously, especially when compared to, you know, some of the other guys they've rolled out there, but just like, you know, a pump fake to bait the defender and then make the extra pass. He just he knows his role, and he's really, really good at it. So I'd be all in on him sliding into the starting lineup like next game.
Yeah.
Whether or not Frank Vogel feels the same way, you know,
he'd be taking his the you know, Frank's Binky spot like that.
Listen, it's I'm not saying it won't happen, because it took what, 23 games for Frank to finally pull the plug on DJ. I think Frank's just awfully forgiving. And I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a clip in which Frank says something bad about his players. I think he really believes that everybody on that team is like, just needs a shot, and they're going to have their moment. I think Avery's probably had enough moments with the Lakers. And I think it's Austin Reeves' time to shine. I'm in. Sign me up.
I mean, this isn't coming from a point of like, you know, because of what we've seen from him, like based on what we've seen from him, he should probably be in that starting group, right? Like he probably should. He has, like you said, earned that spot. He has been the most consistent. He had a couple bad games, I thought, when he came back from injury. But outside of that, I thought he was, you know, he's been one of the more consistent role players that the Lakers have. And, you know, you mentioned it, and it's the perfect reason why he's been so consistent. A lot of times with NBA players, you're talking about guys who are like the best player in the history of their city, right? You're talking about guys who are used to being the best player on every team that they've ever played on, at every stage of their life. And then they get to the NBA and, you know, learning that you are now a role player because you are playing with the actual best people, best basketball players on the planet. Like, learning that you are now a role player can be a very humbling experience. And a lot of times for role players, you know, accepting that and not overextending yourself is really the first step in becoming a consistent and viable role player. And you watch Reeves, and he never overextends himself, like ever, on both sides of the ball. Like, I think he does. He plays good containment defense. I don't think he's anybody who really disrupts a defense or an offense with his approach to guarding on ball. He's basically just like, hey, sometimes like KP, Kristaps Porzingis hit a pull up jumper over the top of him, and there's not much that Reeves can do with somebody who is like 7'4" and capable of jumping and knocking down that jumper. But Reeves was still right there in front of him, and it's really rare that you see him overplaying his hand on defense. Getting beat backdoor and stuff like that. That doesn't happen very often. And then offensively, you never see him forcing things. If anything, I would like to see him push it a little bit more. Like, I can't wait to watch over the course of his career to see what kind of creation chops that he has. Because that pass that he made to Russ with his left hand off of the one dribble, Russ gets blocked by Porzingis. But that was a special pass. That was not something I knew he was really kind of capable of. And you're seeing this guy really kind of develop in front of you. And the only reason why I'm hesitant to put him in the starting lineup is because he's an undrafted rookie. Like, that's it's just resume stuff that I'm doing there. I'm not necessarily sure it's fair, but I do know that that's going to play a role in the decision that Frank makes when you're talking about the guys that he would be taking that starting role over.
I think the whole like experience thing, I've always thought it was stupid, but.
Yeah,
seeing what the Suns did last year and all the talk of like them having one player, I believe, that had played in the postseason prior to last season, and all the teams that had this advantage because of, you know, how many veterans were in their on their team that had all that playoff experience, mm-hmm. had won championships. If he's good, he's good, mm-hmm. especially on this team and at that position. Like, play the best guy you have available.
Yeah.
I understood at the start of the season why Frank turned to Avery Bradley, not just because of the injuries, but it definitely seemed like Frank was grasping at any semblance of familiarity that he could find. And just wanted to put tent poles throughout the roster to kind of help bridge that gap between the players that they brought back from the championship team, but also the new players that needed to get integrated. So I understood that at the time. And I do think Avery Bradley has been better than he's been given credit for. Not that Frank Vogel's given him credit for. I think it would be very hard.
If you listen to Frank, he's the best player on the roster. Right. Yeah.
But I mean, other than Avery Bradley, we really haven't seen too many people get much time with that starting group. I think Austin certainly looked the best. I think Malik Monk's had nights where he's looked really good. And then Wayne Ellington, holy hell.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have probably guessed that he'd look really good next to LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook. Like, that's the exact type of player you want next to them, sans maybe the defense. But even the defense, I thought, was admirable on Wednesday night.
That's the perfect word for it. That's like, you know what? We know going in, the expectations aren't very high, but you're not a disaster.
Right.
You know, but that's really all you're asking for him, you know, and he's a veteran minimum player, right? So if he was good on defense and also the shooter that he is, he would be making a lot more than the veteran's minimum on the open market. And, you know, I've always kind of said with Wayne, just simplify the defense for him, you know, and it's a lot of the same stuff that makes Austin Reeves successful defensively. It's just don't be a disaster. Don't actively hurt us defensively is a lot of what's going on there with both of those players. And I thought, you know, in tonight's game, I thought the play of the game in that game was that sprint back to deflect the pass and force Dallas into the half court instead of a 2-on-1. Like, that was a gigantic play. And, you know, he also airballs a wide open 3-pointer down the stretch of overtime or down the stretch of regulation. But then, you know, short memory and immediately knocks down a 3 that sends him into overtime. I just think with this guy, And with the upside that he presents in terms of shooting the basketball and not needing a lot of time to get himself a look, like, he's perfect for that starting group. So I don't know if I don't think they're going to start both of those guys, especially once Ariza comes back. Ariza's going to be a starter, and then you have, you know, the big three, and after that it just becomes between starting big or starting an extra shooter. Mm-hmm. And I think at this stage of all of the resumes being involved, it's probably going to be Ellington. But I'm not holding it against anybody who thinks Reeves. I'm not holding it against anybody who thinks Monk. Like, the Lakers didn't have Monk tonight. And Monk, I thought, has been, you know, has had the highest highs of any of the shooting guards on this roster. So, the guy who probably shouldn't get that spot is Avery Bradley, and it's tough because he's on that non-guaranteed contract, and it sucks to see, you know, a career come to an end potentially if the Lakers, you know, if they see, hey, we have, you know, between Nunn and Reeves and now Bazemore's working himself back, although he was terrible again, but between Nunn, Reeves, Ellington, Monk, you have guys on guaranteed deals at his position. I just don't see Bradley sticking around should everybody get healthy. Do you think, you know, they send the comfort blanket away? Do you think that's something that actually happens here?
I think that really depends on what happens with the guard rotation at the trade deadline. I think if the Lakers are going to swing for the fences, it involves them trading their biggest salaries outside of LeBron, AD, and Russ, and that's Talen and Nunn. And in the event that happens, yeah, I think it would probably be worth keeping Avery Bradley around. You look at the other options that are out there right now, it's like,
there's not much.
Shaq Harrison, Isaiah Thomas, who scored like
40 points.
40, yeah, something points like on 30 shots. And then Darren Collison, who just deserves to be in that conversation just for how much time he's hung around Staples Center. So, yeah, I think if they kept him on the roster just to keep him on the roster, like not even, you know, for or as a result of a trade or anything, I wouldn't be surprised with that either. I do think, though, given what we know about the Lakers' willingness to spend and their, I guess, desire to have an open roster spot and for the post-trade deadline buyout market, because a lot of people forget, going into the season, the Lakers' plan was to have an open roster spot for the entirety of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then all these injuries started piling up, and, you know, there's Avery Bradley. So I could be convinced both ways, but.
And also like they signed Nunn to only $5 million instead of the entire exception, so that they had, they potentially have a little extra cash to be able to offer a buyout candidate.
And that Marc Gasol trade exception can be used to claim people on the waiver wire. Like,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of directions they can go with that open roster spot, and I think they really value that flexibility. So, could they waive DeAndre Jordan? Yes. Should they waive DeAndre Jordan? Yes. But but I think Avery Bradley's the quickest way to do it. And you know, if Bradley and DJ aren't on the roster come March, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah, any number of things could really happen with this roster, and it wouldn't necessarily surprise me. There are things that I think they should do. Like I think the thing that objectively is the right thing to do at this point is waiving DeAndre. Like once Dwight, we'll see what impact COVID has on Dwight. We saw it really derail Marc Gasol's season last year. And you know, bigger human beings have tended to have a tougher time with COVID than smaller people. So we'll see how that goes with Dwight. And if he comes back, though, and he looks like the Dwight that we saw before he got the positive test, and if Frank is comfortable and LeBron is comfortable playing as much five as he's been playing, and then if eight, you know, also you have the best kind of both way center on the roster in AD, you don't need DeAndre. Like you don't need him there. So, you know, if they're looking to open up that flexibility again, and like you're talking about, if they find themselves in the market for a wing and the only salary that you could send out to do that is THT, then yeah, I agree that it makes sense to have Bradley or keep Bradley around. But if you're going to do that, like it there's opportunity costs elsewhere. And I think that opportunity cost, the smart opportunity cost would be DeAndre Jordan. I don't even necessarily consider that opportunity cost though, because like I have a friend, Kirk, who I you know, from Mavs Moneyball, who was asking on Twitter whether DeAndre is pregnant. And, you know, I'm not here to confirm one way or the other is all I'm going to say.
Yeah. One last thing I'll say about DJ, and you know, the Lakers potentially moving on from him. If the Lakers are going to make a trade, the other thing they need to do is stack veterans minimum contracts. And I think when you look at the roster, even more so than Avery, Baze and DJ stand out to the, as the guys to me that will be stacked and shipped out. So, I don't even know if it needs to be waving DJ, but I agree. I think we've seen enough.
Yeah, well, I think it depends on the trade, and we're going to talk about the potential trades that you wrote there for Silver Screen and Roll. But like, if the Lakers find a way to move Russ, right, and you're getting multiple players back for Russ, then it's clear the guys that you waive to make that happen.
Yeah,
if you're sending out multiple players together for a certain player, then it makes a lot of sense to have those stackable veteran minimum kind of deals. Baze and like Baze tonight, 15 minutes minus 19 on the night. Like
what, he was awful.
What the hell? Like I had high hopes for Baze, and you know, it's been brutal watching him. Let's go ahead and segue though over to the article that you wrote. And all of the trades that that you outlined, you put three trades together here. Let's go trade number one. Lakers get Ken Rich.
Sure.
Kenrick yeah, Williams? Yeah. I think it's Kenrick. They get Kenrick Williams, and they get the $2 million trade exception and a 2023 second round pick. You think he only goes for the second rounder? Like, I feel like there are going to be enough teams looking for a wing that might raise that price a little bit.
I hear that. And, you know, if they needed to throw in a second rounder, I think it would probably get it done.
Yeah.
I don't know if first round picks are being handed out for, I mean, what'll effectively be the ninth guy on the roster. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anybody's giving up a first round pick for him, at least not for him alone. If it's like a Derek Favors, Kenrick Williams, maybe. But I love him. I think they're just everything you think about Bays, or at least thought about Bays going into the season.
Hoped for with Bays.
Yeah. I think Kenrick Williams would step right in and fill that role at a very high level. Like, to the point where I think he would probably start on this team and maybe even close games. He's been that good. He's been so good that the Thunder have a positive point differential with him on the floor.
They probably hate him over there.
On both ends of the floor. Yeah, Sam Presti, ship him out. Just wave him, honestly.
He also, importantly, is 6'7".
Yeah.
And the Lakers currently right now, so when Ariza comes back, he'll be their only role player in that size range of like the 6'7 to 6'9 type guys. And, you know, it in this NBA, you need as many of those guys as possible, just flat out. Those are the most, in my opinion, the most valuable role players. Those guys who are, you know, long enough to defend multiple positions, don't need the ball a ton in their hands, can step out and knock down three-pointers and stuff like that. Like, that's the exact, Williams is the exact kind of player that the Lakers should and will probably be looking at. I just, you know, it's going to be tough because with all of these guys, with Williams, with Grant, with Barnes, with whomever, the price is going to be driven up because there are so many teams that can convince themselves of what they're capable of. There are a lot of teams that think they're playoff teams. There are a lot of teams that if they're playoff teams, they think they can make some noise if they just make the right move. So whatever move it is that the Lakers make and whoever it is that they target, it's probably going to come at a price. And, you know, the other thing that I wanted to ask you just in general before we move on to trade target number two, they have, I think 2026 is the first rounder that they can trade. And
it's 2027, yeah.
2027. So your thoughts on potentially moving that, because, like, that's post-Braun.
Yeah.
That might even be post AD. Right. And, you know, I think if you're moving that pick, it has to, you have to be getting a really, like, a legitimate difference maker.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think for that reason, like, there's that meme of SpongeBob holding Old Faithful, the fishing net, and it's, you know, Talen Horton Tucker, Kendrick Nunn, and the 2027 first. Mm-hmm. That's the best package Lakers can put together without including the big four, Russ, LeBron, AD, and Austin Reeves. Like, that's that's all they got.
Yeah.
And so I don't think teams value that pick as much as maybe Lakers fans might, knowing, you know, what can happen when your franchise player leaves and you have a guy who's has been a number two his whole career, and, you know, even, you know, in moments as a number two hasn't looked like the guy.
Yeah.
It gets dicey. And so I totally agree with you. I think if the Lakers are giving up Talen and that first round pick, you better be getting somebody who is not just a surefire starter on this team, but somebody you can comfortably see with this team for at least 2-3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you almost can't take in an expiring here because, you know, the chances of bringing that guy back or the very risk of that guy leaving via free agency at all is kind of sort of terrifying because, yeah, like you're talking about, that's your last combination of assets that are going out the window there. What are the chances, again, before we really quickly move on to trade option number two, what are the chances the Lakers trade Reeves just to avoid paying in the luxury tax?
Oh, God. I've already... I told myself that after he hit the buzzer beater, too. This is the moment I'm going to think about when the Woj bomb drops that,
yeah,
like, the Lakers rescinded Austin Reeves' qualifying offer because they want to sign, like... God, I don't even know who's one of LeBron's buddies that's still in the league, and Chris Paul. Let's just say Chris Paul. Chris Paul's gonna sign like a $16 million deal after getting bought out by the Suns, and which, you know, Chris Paul's a really good player, but
yeah. But if he's getting bought out, it's probably for a reason, and yeah, and you probably don't want to pay him $16 million.
So yeah, you joke, but I've thought about it.
No, I joke because, you know, it's the way that I cope ahead of time. Like it's my coping mechanism. All right, so trade number two that you wrote here, the Lakers get DeLon Wright and Cam Reddish. They send out Talen Horton-Tucker and Kent Bazemore. Noticeably, not that first round pick, and that is something apparently that the Hawks are potentially looking for. I'm with it. You know, you maintain the guard depth if that is a concern. You get an additional wing, somebody in Reddish who started slow to his career and I think has really picked it up over the last year or so. And, you know, while it would suck to lose Talen Horton-Tucker, somebody who I think I thought I was going to light our Silver Spoon Roll Slack on fire by comparing him to Tyreke Evans. But, you know, people were more onto that comp than I thought they were going to be. So you're trading away Talen Horton-Tucker. Kent Bazemore is just salary at this stage. I like it, but I would be like, Reddish is a little young for if you're trading Talen Horton-Tucker, like, he's fine. Reddish is, if you're not including the first rounder, but that's still the only salary that you have to be able to match in a trade. And so, like, Reddish has to be really good, and there's a good chance that he actually really is. And you now have this guy, plus you get his bird rights too, which is valuable as well. But I don't know if he's necessarily proven enough for my liking. If you're trading away your only tradable salary.
Yeah. My thing is, if
Reddish, I also don't know why Atlanta would be trading him. Like, they're a good team.
Yeah, I think Talen just does more things for them, or more things they need than Cam Reddish is doing right now. And I think the same is true of Reddish and the Lakers. I think I ran this trade by a few Hawks fans because I had the same thought. Like, why would the Hawks want to get off of Reddish if, you know, he's only a year older than Talen, makes right now only $3 million less than Talen.
Mm-hmm.
And by all means is just as raw as Talen Horton-Tucker.
Yeah.
To me, it comes back to, and from the Hawks fans I talked to, it boils down to good players that could be in better situations. And I think if you swap those players, they would look a lot better than
both those situations make more sense.
And listen, I like Talen on draft night. I forgot what movie I was going to see. It honestly might've been Far From Home. I remember it was a Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. I went into the movie theater and I texted, like, let me know when the Lakers draft Talen Horton-Tucker. I come out, Lakers draft Talen Horton-Tucker. I was over the moon. I think he's a really talented prospect. And even with the flashes he's shown with the Lakers, I'm like, okay, if the Lakers were reluctant to trade this guy, I understand why. I just think I would be so much higher on him if they hadn't traded for Russell Westbrook and if they were more complementary pieces to his skill set on the roster. Maybe Kendrick Nunn is that guy when he returns. You know, maybe we see more Talen, Malik Monk lineups down the line. But right now, to your point about the Tyreke Evans comp, Talen's like description, like his profile is an undersized three who slashes. Yeah. Is a good secondary playmaker and is a decent defender.
Mm-hmm.
In no other world where he's not on a rookie contract and the Lakers had to re-sign him to be that salary ballast, do the Lakers target that type of player in free agency?
No.
And
well, and they signed him, I think, they signed him as the player that they hope he becomes, not the player that he actually is right now. There's no guarantee that he actually becomes like the shooter that they think he's capable of becoming, or the defender that they think he's capable of becoming. That was an investment. That was I think Bynum was a lot more surefire at the time when they gave him his extension. But I do remember back when they extended Bynum, there was a lot of like, this is the guy that we think he's capable of. And if he turns into that player, $13 million at that time was a bargain for the potential player that Bynum could become. And I think here with Talen, it's like, if Talen becomes the 3-and-D wing, albeit undersized, then $9 million bucks a year or $11 million bucks a year for this guy is a bargain. And, you know, maybe it works out, but if it doesn't, and he's the only guy that you have at that kind of contract number, then that's a giant gamble that goes awry.
Yeah, and I think Aaron was the one that said it in Slack today, that, you know, Talen's biggest draw right now is that he's young, as is the case for most players.
It's the first thing everybody talks about this guy. It's like, oh, he's only 21. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. But, like, the Lakers are looking to win a championship now.
And for that reason, I think if Talen and Reddish were making the same money, you swap them both. I think that's a lateral move for both teams, at least in terms of talent. When it comes to fit, I think both players would be much better off in those situations. And hey, don't discount acquiring DeLon Wright either. I know he's not like the sexiest name to get back in.
I've always kind of liked him.
His defense is for real, and it has been for like a few years now. I think he has like the second best defensive rating on the Hawks right now. So yeah, I think the Williams trade is still my favorite, just because I think it's the most realistic. But if the Lakers made this trade, I would be pretty happy about it. But also, I would be like caught. I'd be rooting for Cam Reddish with the knowledge that there is a chance that Cam Reddish isn't as good as Talen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's about fair, that Reddish doesn't have the upside that Talen has, but Reddish also fits better, which probably helps the Lakers more anyway.
Yeah.
The last trade that you have here, TJ Warren coming back to the Lakers, THT and DeAndre Jordan going out. Same thing with Jordan as with Bazemore a second ago. Yeah. It's just salary. It's just what you need to make it work. TJ Warren, has he played yet this year? I don't think he's played yet.
He played four games in the 2020-21 season. It's been a minute since he's played.
But he was incredible in the bubble. Incredible.
Yeah. I think SB Nation wrote a story titled TJ Warren is the Michael Jordan of the NBA bubble. And he was. I think Damian Lillard ultimately ended up winning the bubble MVP, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, TJ Warren was incredible, and this is a trade that went through many different variations, because this is the big trade where the Lakers go all in. They trade Talen, and you know, in its first draft, it was Talen, Kendrick, and a first round pick and salary filler for like Jeremy Grant. I don't know why
Detroit the Pistons
or the Pacers, when it comes to Miles Turner, or any team that has like a really good player, which Miles Turner, make no mistake, Jeremy Grant and Miles Turner are both very good players, would likely close games for the Lakers. Why are you giving your biggest, one of your biggest assets up for Talen Horton-Tucker, Kendrick Nunn, and a 2027 first round pick?
Nunn, who hasn't and might not play this year.
Right. Maybe it's, you know, the number one pick in 2027. It's possible. But ideally, you get more than that. And that's why in that article, I said, I would love Jeremy Grant or Miles Turner. That sounds awesome. But the Lakers already made their big plays. Like, they traded every pick they have for, like, the foreseeable future for Anthony Davis. And, you know, for Russell Westbrook, they traded all of the
movable salary. Mm-hmm.
So,
and then didn't bring back movable salary in Caruso.
Yeah.
For those of you who are just listening, the face plant, the forehead plant that just happened there.
It just doesn't make sense. Like, that's why I don't get, and I don't mean to rant about, I'll keep it short, but any dummy that comes into my mentions talking about, you know, the Lakers weren't going to pay that much for Alex Caruso because he would have taken so much out of the luxury tax and he's not worth that money.
Why do we care?
Maybe. Okay. Yes, exactly. That's not my money.
Yeah.
And anybody that's worrying about Genie Buss's money in that way, why do you care?
It's just weird.
Like, especially
she's not going to break you off any of it.
Exactly. And as somebody who like my 1B when it comes to watching sports is European soccer. These guys, every summer, they could have a team that just won the biggest trophy in Europe, and they'll go, this guy's available for $75 million, let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm game. And there are teams in the league that do that. The Golden State Warriors being the prime example.
Yeah.
Like, there are teams that do it, and the benefit, not just of keeping Alex Caruso, who in all likelihood, if he can stay healthy, we'll make one of the all-defensive teams this year, if not the all-defensive first team, which is nuts, and it drives me insane.
We've been calling for it for years.
But beyond that,
yeah,
the additional $9 million in salary, if you're looking to make that extra move, Alex Caruso, Talen Horton-Tucker, and a 2027 first-round pick, sounds a whole lot nicer and gets you a whole lot more than what the Lakers have right now.
Yep.
So that makes me mad when I hear people justifying why the Lakers didn't bring Alex Caruso back. Just shut up.
Yeah, there's no like more efficient way to get yourself muted than to try to make the argument that the Lakers it was okay that they let Caruso go. But
sorry,
you know what? The Lakers are coming off an overtime win. We don't need to go there.
Yeah.
This trade here, so it's interesting. It's the kind of deal that, like, the only reason Warren is available is because he hasn't played. And so you're buying low. What's that? And well, like, the Pacers, like, they have all these guys who I like, but they don't really have an engine. Like, it's just, I don't know. It kind of reminds me of Daewoo back in the day, where they made all these cars that looked, you know, that looked cool and looked futuristic. But then, like, you popped open the hood and you were just like, oh my God, this is a Pinto. Like, this is not going to, like, stay upright for very long. And so like, that's the Indiana Pacers or the Indiana Pintos in that like, it's just, if you rear end them, they blow up. And like, Warren is one of these guys that on any team, and whoever trades for him, maybe he comes back and he's healthy. And at the end of the year, everybody who is watching whatever playoff team he's on is saying, I can't believe they were able to get TJ Warren for this or whatever.
Yeah.
I could totally see that, but I could also totally see the Lakers giving up their only asset here in Talen Horton-Tucker for a guy who might not play. And that's kind of terrifying.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. And, you know, I noted in the story that's probably why the Lakers won't make that trade. That's a big reason I wouldn't make the trade. This is just me really illustrating this is the biggest play the Lakers can make, realistically, in my opinion. And it's a really risky one,
yeah.
Which is really all you're going to get with what they have is imperfect players. Because again, Talen, for as much upside as he has, is an imperfect player on a contract that doesn't currently reflect the player he is. And, you know, if you're Indiana wanting to get a young player, an asset in return, that's awesome. I hope they get it. But, you know, if the Lakers want to take that gamble, I think it's smarter than any move they would make otherwise involving Talen. But if they decide not to, I wouldn't blame them. I think, you know, there are worse things they can do than keep Talen around.
What do you think of Russell Westbrook for Miles Turner, TJ Warren, and Jeremy Lamb?
I hate it. How dare you? I told you on Twitter the other day, all you have to do is just sit back and enjoy all of it. Like, the blueprint is there. The meme exists for a reason. Uh-huh. November to, you know, hopefully this year. It's like July. But, Russell Westbrook is the greatest player on the planet.
Yeah.
And I mean, look at the Mavericks game. I think he played pretty the big three, I'll tell you.
I thought he was all right. Like, he made some big plays. He made monster shot, obviously, the giant three pointer that he made and all of that. But then I also thought, like, what did he have, like 13 turnovers? What did he have? 4 turnovers. But they were loud. They were allowed for. I don't really have any complaints about Russell Westbrook to this point. I mostly just, you know, throw him into trades to piss off Philip Barnett. Like that's yeah. a big part of the reason there.
In our NBA meeting the other day, we were putting together like a skeleton of a trade that would get Russ back to OKC and yeah. somehow Lakers get Ben Simmons back.
And Buddy Hield.
And Buddy Hield. It's a wild one. I'm going to be completely honest with you. But I've thought about it. I've sat with it for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is just, you know, the water I'm drinking talking.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have Russ. I'm going to be honest.
Over Ben Simmons.
Yeah. With this team.
Wow.
With LeBron James and Anthony Davis, I think I'd rather have Russ. I love him. I love
Holy
him.
Holy crap. That is, I was not prepared for that take. Mm-hmm. I got to think long and hard about that one. I'm curious I wonder if you put it to a poll, who Lakers fans would prefer, Simmons or
with this team, Russ. You gotta specify that with this team, the way this roster is constructed, I think I'd rather have Russ.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
I think you're probably in the minority, but uh-huh. I could be convinced. Like, I think if you make the case where it's like, the one thing you can never, ever say about Russ is that he is scared of the moment. If anything,
exactly.
he's too yes. unscared of the moment. Like, there mm-hmm. are moments where you're just like, I wish you were a little bit more nervous about this moment. You can't say that about Ben Simmons. Like, he had the yips. And last that we saw him in the postseason, he had the yips. He was unwilling to go up for a dunk against Trey Turner because he didn't want to get to the free throw line. So, like, I could kind of be convinced, but I still think you're probably in a very, very, very outnumbered minority.
Ben Simmons does not take that shot over Maxi Kleber.
No, he does not.
Russell Westbrook does. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
That was one game series against the Mavericks. I'm taking Westbrook.
I don't know. Like, for those of you who are watching the pressure cooker and then also now listening to the show, I almost died because of that shot. I almost died. I started coughing like profusely because I was laughing so hard because it was the most rushed shot. He had just airballed a three from the other side of the court. That was technically a better look, but nope, he pulled it and he was the bottom. All right, let's wrap up here. Let's get out of here on your most embarrassing sports moment. As everybody knows, the reason that we do this segment is because of the video that Harrison posts every single chance that he gets. Although the coward is still unwilling to put anything that he has ever done physically on the internet. Christian, what's your most embarrassing sports moment?
Well, I want to say I'm I'm going to make a guess and say that's probably not your most embarrassing sports moment. I'm sure you have others. That can't be it. I'm sorry. I also want to say I coined the term the churro step, which is what the only thing I that's refer to it as.
That should be its name. People call it the Euro stumble, but it should be the churro step for sure. Yes,
exactly. my embarrassing sports story, I played soccer growing up. That was my first love. And like, going in, when I had like dreams of becoming a sports writer, it was soccer. Like, uh-huh. I wanted to cover soccer, and then basketball came along. I don't know how.
It's a bad country to try to be a sports writer in.
I mean, back then, absolutely. Now it's
better now. Yeah, for sure.
And so the point is, on good teams, I would play right back because they're just the fact of the matter is there are better attacking players than me. On bad teams, I was a right winger, which is a position, not a mm-hmm. political stance.
Outkick indeed over here.
on this team, I played out on the right, and I had a through ball played beautifully to me by one of my teammates. I was gone. And back then I had jets. I know I don't look like it now, but man, listen, I took the silver medal at the Mount Sac relays at the 100 meter dash. All right.
There you go.
I was not messing around.
Yeah.
But I've
given up on trying to tell anybody I was ever athletic. Cause like you see multiple chins wangling around while I'm talking and nobody's ever buying that.
By myself, through ball, in on goal, one-on-one with the keeper. I would have had a goal, and it honestly probably would have been my only goal of the season. I get tripped up.
Oh no.
And I get up fuming because I am like, I want my
one shot.
Yeah.
My one opportunity.
And so I get up, I'm fuming. I look to whoever's around me, just ready to square up. I'm taking that red card because whatever like play we're drawing up from this free kick.
Yeah.
It's not
featuring you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I look around and I looked at the sidelines and I see that the parents laughing. The hell are they laughing?
Oh no.
And, I look around me and there's nobody around me. that's how like far ahead I was.
Yeah.
And I thought some kid that was just as fast just came back and just clipped me from behind. I fell hard.
It was the 18 yard line.
And it was nobody. I tripped on my own foot, breakaway, one-on-one with the goalie. And my teammate just grabbed me by the shoulder and walked me back. Because, I mean, they're not going to call a foul.
Was it the teammate who played you the ball?
No. It was my buddy Oscar Pena, who is really good. He's also really good at basketball. But, man. I think about that all the time and I'm just like, damn, man.
I always like to ask people like, how long ago was that? Not 30 yet, right? So
no, I was 16.
So we talked about a decade?
Almost. Next year man, it'll be a young. Decade.
It's unbelievable. I'm almost a decade older.
I'm still so much younger than you. That's the great thing is it was a decade ago for me, but 16.
Yeah, that'd have been two decades ago for me.
What was that? Did the Beatles go on to make their American debut when you were 16 years old?
Yeah, it's funny to watch Get Back because I was like there. I was there. I was in charge of giving Ringo his Stella Artois. Like that was my job.
That's not a bad job.
Yeah, he shared. He was you know, here, you take one and I take one. And it was great. It was fantastic. All right, man. Well, thank you very much for sharing the embarrassing sports moment. We've all been there. Like anybody who's ever played soccer.
No, you haven't. You have not felt that shame.
Not that bad. Not like where I'm completely alone, but like where you know your feet get too far ahead of you. And I had a coach. I had a coach who had like a real shrill voice. And we were up by like, you know, we were up like 5-1 or something like that. And I got by the defender. And I was in open field and same kind of thing. I got really excited because I was about to score a goal and I just, you know, cross myself up, getting ready to, you know, to just put a nice easy pass around the keeper. And I just, you know, misstepped and I slipped, and the ball just kind of like lazily meanders its way over to the keeper. And this coach, his name is Steve Behrens. He had, again, super shrill voice. So there were like seven fields on this field.
Yeah.
And he just screams out at me, "Sniper got you, huh?" And you could hear like people laughing from fields over, and that was funny.
I mean, that's what happened to me. I wouldn't be surprised if that same coach was there.
Steve Behrens, that guy was a piece of work. But anyway, that's gonna do it though for this episode of the Anthony Irwin Show. Lakers win again. They beat the Dallas Mavericks in Dallas, 107 to 104 in overtime. I think I predicted a win that wouldn't necessarily feel that much like a win, but shouts to Austin Reeves for really actually making it feel like a win. I'm curious what people are going to say about him being in the starting lineup, or Ellington, or whoever. I do know one popular sentiment is going to be that the guy who is currently in the starting lineup probably should not. So we'll see how that goes over in the next 24 hours or so. Until tomorrow, when I have a show with Harrison, and we line this up, clearly not knowing that Reeves was going to hit the shot that he hit, Harrison and I lined up an interview with Miran Fader of The Ringer, who wrote a fantastic profile of Austin Reeves that I actually read, which is in and of itself, you know, the utmost compliment that I can give somebody. So you're going to want to check out that profile, and then Harrison and I are going to talk to Miran tomorrow afternoon. Until then, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Christian Rivas. This was the Anthony Irwin Show, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.